And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
And welcome, everybody. Hands on Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuda. You have now entered into the Apologetics Dojo, Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetic Zone, and where we wrestle with the faith and learn how to explain, defend, and share the faith with others with charity and clarity and confidence. And it's great to be back with you today, you know, start of a new week. It's nice to come into the dojo, see the desk nice and clear and ready for work. And got a very cool week in store for you today on Hands-On Apologetics. In fact, kicking off today, we have Dr. John Papandrea, who makes his first entrance into the dojo. And Dr. John is going to share with us some of his findings in a book that he co-wrote with Mike Aquilina, titled How Christianity Saved Civilization and Must Do So Again. We've had Mike on a few times on the show, so it'd be great to talk to Dr. Papandrea about this work because, man, it's very important, I think, for anyone who is a Catholic to understand where we came from and where we're going, and where we came from, how Christianity revolutionized the ancient world, that the ancient world was very different than before than after the great evangelism that took place in the first 4 or 5 centuries of the church and thereafter. And ladies and gentlemen, it's now that the world is rejecting Catholicism and Christianity in general, guess what? We are sliding back into that pre-Christian world. So it's important to learn exactly what was that world and what truths did Christianity introduce to it that transformed it. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we got to do that again. So it's going to be a very important topic today with Dr. John Papandrea. I look forward to chatting with him. He'll be coming on the other side of the first break. And as always, we are going to have our critical thinking segment, which is the Finding the Fallacy. And today's fallacy, by the way, is the fallacy of composition. And we're going to also meet an early church father, like we do so on every program. Today's early church father is an antipope, folks, and that is Novatian. So we're going to talk about Novatian. And also, you are part of the program, especially when Dr. John comes on the program. If you want to give us a call, please do at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Love to hear from you. And, you know, we closed out last week with a trip to the dojo mailbox. That was a lot of fun. In fact, we didn't even empty the mailbox. There's still a couple of emails left in there that I'd love to share with you on the air. But please keep them coming, folks. It's good stuff. If you have any questions, comments, maybe new ideas about how to share the faith, perhaps, or maybe you're in a situation you're not really sure how to explain the faith or where to go in a particular dialogue, send us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. It's questions@handsonapologetics.com, all one word, and it comes straight to the dojo mailbox. And I do try to reply to every email that I receive. Now, folks, there's all sorts of different ways you can contact us. That is the most direct way, and that's the way, really, that you'll get your question on, possibly on the air. I don't put everything on the air, of course, but there are those that some really outstanding things that I do put on the air. And it's time for our shout-outs for those watching live stream on social media, such as Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everyone. Aha, great. Yes, hats off to Mr. Gary and the dojo. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. And I also want to thank you for tuning in, listening to the program. We love to have you. I know a lot of people hear us live on the air, but also a good portion of you listen via podcast. And so I want to just mention that If perhaps you can't listen to the entire program, or there's a past program that we've done that you're interested in, you can always access that through the virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. Yes, the powerhouse website, and all the programs up there. Not only Hands-On Apologetics, but all the other great programs too. All right, so with that, let's jump into our critical thinking skill exercise, and that is the finding the fallacy, which is the fallacy of composition. And this is a fairly common fallacy, and it's also one that's very easy to understand. See, the error, the fallacy occurs when one assumes that what's true for a member of a group is also true for the group as a whole. Okay, so for example, if a piece of an airplane is light, and then you pick up another piece of an airplane and that's light, then it's wrong to conclude, however, that the entire airplane put together would be light, right? That would be the fallacy of composition. Or let's take another one. This one I like because it's, I like the ridiculous examples because it really shows how these things are fallacious. For example, atoms. Have you seen an atom recently? No, atoms are invisible, right? And we're made up of atoms. Therefore, we must be invisible. I love that one. It's just, that is so apparent, isn't it? It's definitely the fallacy of composition going on there. Why? Because you're arguing that what's true of a part or parts must be true of the whole. So if atoms are invisible, then we who are a collection of atoms must also be invisible. Love that one. All right, and there's other ones too, like John bought a lottery ticket and won, and Sally bought one and won. So all ticket buyers are winners. Or, you know, you could say Jane, who is a Catholic, is a bad person. Therefore, all Catholics are bad people. And that, again, you know, fallacious reasoning. So it's good to keep in mind the fallacy of the composition. Fallacy of composition. Folks, it's out there, and don't be caught committing it, okay? Okay, let's move on, shall we, to the Meet the Early Church Fathers segment. And as I mentioned before, our early church father is known as an antipope. Now, what's an antipope? An antipope is basically a person who is illegitimately elected pope. And, for example, there will be a legitimate pope, and then if another person has a subsequent election, they would be considered an antipope. Okay, so you always have a pope and an antipope. And the antipope that we're going to talk about is a person named Novatian. Now, Novatian, quote-unquote, reigned as antipope from AD 251 to 258. And we first meet Novatian in more probably correct form. His name is probably Novatus. About the year 250 AD, when he was a priest of a great prominence amongst the clergy in Rome, we also, by the way, have two letters addressed by him and by the Roman clergy to St. Cyprian that was sent during a long vacancy prior to the election of Pope St. Cornelius I. Now, we've been talking about this in recent episodes, so just for those who are tuning in and don't know the context, there was a long vacancy between the former pope and Pope St. Cornelius I, and during that time, there was also St. Cyprian in North Africa, who held to a very rigorous view about whether or not heretics could be reconciled with the church, or those who lapsed, those who repudiated the faith during persecution, whether, you know, to what degree they could come back, and whether their baptism, if they were baptized in a heretical sect, whether they had to be rebaptized. Well, so there was these rigorous tendencies coming out of this era of persecution where Catholics, many Catholics felt like, no, they shouldn't be allowed back in. Well, it was during this period that Novatian or Novatus kind of comes on the scene. And there's no doubt that he wished to be made the Bishop of Rome, but he wasn't. And at any rate, when Cornelius was elected in March of the year 251 AD, he showed some attitudes of leniency in regarding to these lapsed Catholics. but suddenly reversed, and his own lenient views became very rigorous. And according to Eusebius' church history, he found three guileless bishops in a part of Italy and plied them with wine till they were no longer in their right senses, and he succeeded in having them consecrate him bishop. And from that time on till his death in 258, he was reckoned as an antipope. I don't understand that. How can you get guileless bishops to get drunk? That one I don't understand. I'll have to write to Juergens and find out how those two square. But nevertheless, it's from him that a sect was formed known as the Novationist, which he founded and spread with some success to Spain and even to Syria. And it lasted actually for a few centuries. So he not only was an antipope, but he also caused a kind of heretical schism, I guess you could say, within the church. The Novitas schism is characterized not by doctrinal differences. In other words, they believe the same thing that we Catholics believe. You know, they believed in the Trinity and the Eucharist and sacraments and so on. But really what distinguished them was their insistence upon rigorous practices. In other words, they forbade entirely second marriages. So if your wife dies, you're not allowed to remarry. He also refused absolutely any reconciliation with those who lapsed from the faith. So, you know, that's, like I said, that tendency that was coming out of, in reaction to, the pagan persecutions that took place in North Africa. And basically, he kind of championed it. So that's our early church father today. Novation. And coming up on the other side of the break, Dr. Jim Papandrea joins us to talk about how Christianity saved civilization. It's going to be a lot of fun, folks. Stay tuned. I'm Gary Machida. More to come.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, folks, to Hands-On Apologetics. And How did Christianity save civilization? Well, our next guest is going to help walk through the amazing ways in which the revelation of Christ in and through his church has dynamized and changed civilization to what it was. And unfortunately, we're kind of slipping back into how it used to be. So it's important to see what all those different areas in which Christianity itself had transformed the ancient world. And to help us do that, we have Dr. Jim Papandreas. Papandreas is a teacher, author, speaker, and musician. After graduating from the University of Minnesota with a bachelor's degree in music and theater arts, Jim went on to receive his master's divinity degree in Fuller Theological Seminary with a concentration in youth ministry. Then spent several years in full-time ministry, focusing on youth and music ministry and serving as a consultant for youth ministry. Jim holds a PhD in the history and theology of the early Christian church from Northwestern University, and with a secondary concentration on New Testament interpretation and history of the Roman Empire. Dr. Jim, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Thank you. It's a blessing to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, hey, the pleasure is all ours. We've had Mike Aquilina on a few times, so sorry for the delay to get you on.
No, that's all right. I don't mind following him. He's a tough act to follow, though. He's a good man.
Yeah, he is. You know, I didn't realize this, so hopefully you won't mind, but how in the world did a Fuller Theological Seminary grad end up in the Catholic Church? Do you mind maybe giving us a couple of minutes summary of, you know, your journey of faith?
Yeah, sure. I don't mind at all. It's not that unusual for people who study the early church and the church fathers to find their way to the Catholic Church. I was baptized Catholic, but was raised in the Protestant world and ended up going to Fuller. And I'm grateful for that. I got a good education at Fuller Seminary. I fell in love with church history at Fuller Seminary. But I felt coming out of that I really hadn't done enough in the church fathers. And so when I decided to go back, get my PhD and go into teaching, I wanted to study the church fathers. And then, you know, it was kind of all downhill from there. As you can imagine, my story isn't that different from some other people who have found their way back to the Catholic Church through the church fathers as well. And, you know, that really is sort of the heart of it. And that is that when you really do the homework, you find out that, you know, there's this Protestant myth that the Protestant Reformation was somehow getting back to an original or a pristine version of Christianity before the Catholics added all these, you know, superstitions or whatever. But when you actually study it and you look at the early church through the primary sources and the church fathers, you realize there is no such thing as pre-Catholic Christianity, right? There is no Christian church before the Catholic Church. It's Catholic from the beginning. And when you realize that, you know, people like me sort of come to the conclusion, well, I have to be part of this. I can't not be a part of this thing that goes back all the way to Jesus and the apostles in this unbroken chain, you know.
Yeah.
So that's really what happened to me.
Yeah, it's dug into history and it ceased to be Protestant, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, what was it that you felt was insufficient in regards to your education in church history? Like, because I think your major was youth and music ministry, right?
Right. Well, I did that as kind of a concentration, but of course I took the basic MDiv degree. And so in that we had, you know, the church history. And so the church history that I got, I fell in love with. And the church history professor that I had at the time was great, but he was a Reformation guy, right? He was more, his area of research and his love was the Reformation. And so I got just enough of a taste of the early church and the church fathers to know that I wanted more. And so after I finished that degree, I started doing a little bit of my own reading in the church fathers, but then I needed to go back. I one of the things that happened to me was I just discerned that pastoral ministry was not really my calling, that my calling is to the classroom. And so I had to go back to school and get a PhD one way or the other. So I decided to study the early church.
And the rest is history.
That's right.
Oh, so, you know, looking at your bio, I can see you have a great love of church history. Mike Aquilina does as well. You're both, you know, speakers and so on. You're both musicians, too, or at least you both love music. So how did you go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying he's also a songwriter. He's written some songs with Dion, and he's done some cool stuff too. So yeah.
A lot of people don't know that about Mike. So how did you two get together, and where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, we were introduced, actually Scott Hahn introduced us. And I had multiple people actually say to me on different occasions, you know, do you know this Mike Aquilina guy? You guys would get along. Both Italian, you know, you should know him. And it was finally at a thing that he, Scott and Mike were speaking at in the Chicago area, actually at the church, the Catholic church where I was baptized. And when I found out Scott was going to be in town, I went, and Mike was speaking there too. And so Mike and I became fast friends. And really, from the first day we met, we talked about how we both had discovered in our own research that in many ways, you know, the culture is becoming, you know, what some people call post-Christian. But post-Christian really looks a lot like pre-Christian in the sense that, you know, our culture is kind of coming full circle to the way it was before the church converted the Roman Empire to when you know, the culture was pagan, and we are, you know, moving more and more into a culture that looks pagan and looks the way it did before Christianity converted the culture. And, we both talked about how we had discovered that, and we should write a book about that. And so eventually we did. And this is the book.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. You know, I think that's an area of history that has been largely forgotten, especially by Christians and even Catholics, that we really don't have any kind of inkling about how the world was outside of Christianity or at the very beginning of Christianity. So we don't have any real way to compare, like, you know, what was it that Christianity brought to the world?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, for a lot of people, no fault of their own, but if they haven't done their own homework, for a lot of people, church history sort of begins and ends with St. Augustine. And what you have to remember is that by the time Augustine came along, Christianity had already been legalized and had already become this sort of official religion of the Roman Empire by the time Augustine was converted to Christianity. And so people forget that there's a whole centuries long history of the church before it was legalized and when it was persecuted, and it was that persecuted church that converted the culture, right? And we're kind of coming full circle to that, where we're experiencing certain kinds of persecution, depending on where you live in the world, and we're going to have to convert the world again, too.
Yeah, that's, you're right, because it is kind of coming full circle, because, apparently the pagan world was just basically how unredeemed humanity saw the world, you know, that it lacked the various things. Actually, I don't want to steal the thunder of the rest of the program, but you know, it just didn't have a lot of the things that we take for granted today.
That's right. And I mean, you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, unredeemed humanity can be expected to move in a certain direction, and you know, unredeemed individuals tend to be selfish, and even redeemed individuals tend to be selfish a lot of the time. But when you put them together and turn them into an empire, then you create a situation where the people with the power exploit the people who don't have power.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So, we're coming up on a break. One question I have is, in your research, did you find that this Christian Revolution, did it start off at its peak and slowly go down, or did it build up to a crescendo, or did it transform the world, or did it take a long time for it to do so?
That's a great question, and the short answer is it took a long time. I mean, some people have a view of the early church that it was perfect and pristine at the beginning, and then it was all downhill from there. And others have this view that it was, you know, like sort of disorganized at the beginning and built up to a golden age. And really, neither of those sort of extreme scenarios are true. It's a mixed bag, and life is messy as it always is. And it took longer for some things to develop than others. There are some things that the church was able to do when it was persecuted. There were other things that had to wait until the church was legalized and had a certain amount of I don't want to say power, but a certain amount of clout in the culture. And then there were other things that required people to be willing to die for them. There were things that required martyrdom to make an impact. That you know, Christians would rather be removed from the world than conform to the world, and that was the kind of thing that made an impact on their neighbor in a lot of ways as well. So you know, it just sort of depends, but it was a process.
Yeah. And one more general question, and then we'll jump to the particulars after the break. Was this the ideas of these revolutions, was it part of the church and then it filtered out to the world, or did the church also kind of reform itself as it was reforming the world?
Well, you know, it kind of evolves over time as well. The way we organized the topics in the book was kind of in concentric circles, working outward from the individual to the home, to the workplace, religion, community, and the state at large. And so we kind of worked outwardly in concentric circles. But it's not as though that was a sort of chronological progression. It's really more dynamic than that. And, you know, there were times during the heaviest times of persecution when the church, you know, the best the church could do was circle the wagons and worry about the people inside the church. And there were other times when the church could care for those outside of the church, and that itself made an impact. And especially during times of plague, for example, when Christians were willing to risk their own lives to care for the sick, who weren't even the Christian sick, but the non-Christian sick. And these kinds of, there are times when the church was able to have more outreach, and there were other times when the church was looking more inward, but it was a dynamic process.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's fascinating. I really appreciate the book. By the way, folks, we're talking with Dr. Jim Papandrea about his book that he co-wrote with Mike Aquilina on How Christianity Saved Civilization and Must Do So Again. If you have any questions for Dr. Jim, give us a call at 888-526-2151. We're going to jump into the particulars, folks, and this is fascinating stuff, so you want to stay tuned. You listen to Hands on Apologetics with Gary Machuda. We'll be right back in just a moment.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Dr. Jim Papandrea about his book, How Christianity Saved Civilization and Must Do So Again. And, you know, Dr. Jim, this is such an important book because we're just being pounded, not only us, but our youth, that of this kind of radical egalitarianism, that everybody's the same, everybody's the equal. No one is any more, you know, special or different than anybody else. But, you know, when you look to history, and especially your book, you realize that, no, Christianity isn't just one among many. It is a powerful dynamic force.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my own personal view, of course, is that, you know, there is a great difference between Christianity and the other religions, because other religions are basically a human attempt to reach out or reach up and understand God, whereas Christianity is the only religion where God really comes to us. And and you know, without that, we're hopeless. And so, you know, there's a myth about the Roman Empire that the Romans were tolerant of all religions. And that is so not true. In fact, when you study the empire, the Romans persecuted several different religions. They were tolerant of some in order to prevent rebellion. But on the other hand, they were very, very intolerant of anything that they saw as sort of opposing their own views. And this is exactly the kind of thing we're seeing in culture now, where there's lip service paid to equality and everyone gets the same treatment. But if you oppose their assumptions, they will persecute you. They will try to marginalize you. And we're seeing this happen in our own country, and we're seeing it happen. It's even sort of farther along in places like Canada and some other places where, you know, Christians who speak up for traditional values are marginalized and persecuted. And so, you know, there's this hypocrisy, this double standard, you know, this talking about equality as long as you agree with us. But if you don't agree with us, then we're going to call you intolerant, and that gives us permission not to tolerate you. And so it's this sort of, you know, ultra tolerance that results in an intolerance. It's a very insidious kind of hypocrisy. But, you know, if you call it out, then, you know, it just calls attention to you, and then you become the subject of their bullying.
Yeah, very good. Very well put. So while we work through some of the things, like, for example, the person, the human person, that seems like an odd thing that Christianity would have something to do with. Didn't pagans believe in, you know, human person, dignity of human person?
Well, you know, that's another one of these great ironies, because while, you know, many people who oppose the church would claim that they stand for equality and the dignity of all human people, they got that from the church, right? Without the church, there would be no concept of the equality of all people, because it was the church that converted the world to the idea that all people are made in the image of God, and therefore all people are equal. Before the church came along, if you said to the average Roman, all people are created equal, they would have laughed at you. They would have said, how can you say that when you look around and say, well, there's the emperor and there's the slave. You're telling me they're created equal? The Roman sensibility was that some people were created to rule and to control, and that was you know, pretty much the 1%, and the 99% were created to serve the 1% and to entertain the 1%, even at the cost of their very lives, where life and death becomes entertainment. And so this idea of human dignity and what we call human rights simply did not exist before Christianity came along and converted the world to this idea of the equality of all people made in the image of God.
Yeah, yeah. Now the Jews had a similar idea. I mean, they believed in Genesis that, you know, God made man in his own image. What was it that was part of the Christian revelation that superseded that or intensified that?
Well, I think, we have to give credit where credit is due. I mean, the idea that all people are created in the image of God, I mean, we got that from Hebrew religion. The difference is, I think, that in the Old Testament, Judaism is kind of characterized as a separation from the world. So, in fact, they were told right out, you know, don't mix with the other cultures, don't intermarry, keep to yourselves. So they had this great idea. They had a lot of great ideas. They had the Ten Commandments. They had all this great revelation from God, but they kept it to themselves. And you know, not their fault. They were told to do that. They kept it to themselves. Christianity came along and evangelized it and took these ideas along with the gospel out to the world and converted the world to this way of thinking.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Yeah, we often forget that it's during that preparatory stage that they were a distinct people apart from the others, and that the whole orientation of Christianity is outward.
Yeah, that's right. Good. That's right. And you know, I mean, the Jews gave us the idea that God is one, but it's Christianity that gave us the idea that God is love.
Yes.
And you know, that takes it to the next level, right?
Yeah,
so not in the sense of superseding, but just in the sense of taking it to the next level and taking it out to the world and converting the world.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, how did it revolutionize the home? Like I said, this is usually a blank spot. If you were to ask your average Catholic in the pew, give me an example of how a pagan household would run. I think most people wouldn't be able to give, a couple of sentences, and it would be purely a guess. So how was that transformed?
Different. Well, you know, the first thing you have to understand is that in the Roman world, marriage, a legal marriage, is a business contract. It's a contract of convenience meant to enhance networking and consolidate wealth. So if you don't have wealth, there's no need to have a legal marriage. And what most people don't realize, and in fact, some people could not have a legal marriage because a match across certain social class boundaries was not allowed by law. So what most people don't realize is that in the early church, many people in the Roman Empire were not married in the sense of having a legally registered marriage that was recognized by the Roman government. Many people in the early church would not have had a legally registered marriage. They had a home that was blessed by their bishop, and that's what they had. But the difference is that in these legal marriages for the Romans, adultery was defined in ways that still allowed men to have multiple sexual partners, not to mention their own slaves, and prostitution was legal and widely available and expected in society. And so, you know, in the legal marriage, you have all of this sort of openness, and yet in the church, you had what was coming to be seen as a sacramental marriage, which is one man and one woman keeping themselves to each other. And, you know, it's interesting when we read the early apologists, how they will say, we Christians are pretty much no different from you Romans, except that we do share our food, but we don't share our wives. And that becomes one of the sort of identity markers of Christianity in its countercultural nature at the time.
Wow.
You know, the idea that that women and their bodies are commodities was a normal business as usual idea in Rome. And the church, you know, came to sort of reject that and say, no, People are not commodities. Women and their bodies are not commodities. And children are not a burden on our finances. You know, the whole idea of abortion and infanticide being perfectly acceptable in the Roman Empire is another whole aspect of the idea of the dignity of every human person and of the home. For the church, children were to be treasured, raised, educated, not exploited, not killed. But this was also very countercultural at the time.
Yeah. In fact, wasn't it fathers had the authority to determine whether their child's going to be put to death after they're born or even before?
Yeah, I mean, right, sure. Well, and the interesting thing about that is that the Romans understood that there was no difference between a life pre-birth and post-birth. Of course, they would kill it either way if they wanted to. But, you know, in our culture, we have this sort of fiction that there's somehow, it's somehow different after it's born as opposed to before. And that makes, you know, that for in some people's minds, that makes abortion acceptable. Even the Romans knew that was ridiculous. No, I mean, 5 minutes earlier, what, you know, so.
Yeah.
But for the Romans, yes, you're right. I mean, in general, the husband of the woman giving birth had the power to choose to accept the child into his home or to kill it or expose it, put it out on the garbage heap and leave it out for the elements or the wild animals. And so this, you know, this idea of either they had abortion then too through different means, chemicals or drugs and different kinds of things that they could do. So, you know, they could abort their children, they could kill their children shortly after birth. They really, I mean, had the right to kill their children later, too, if they wanted to, but it was frowned upon. But they could do it. And so just this idea, again, that children are not people, but they're property, you know, and the head of a household can dispose of his property if he chooses to.
Wow. And the wife would have no say on this?
Right. I mean, apart from whatever sort of emotional, kind of pressure she could exert on her husband, apart from that, no, she really didn't have a legal say. It really wasn't until the emperors got worried about not having enough men for the legions that they started to think about laws surrounding childbearing, family, and abortion. But even then, it was really, you know, only for this sort of practical idea of, well, you know, if we abort all our babies, we won't have any soldiers, you know.
Yeah, wow. Well, you know, as you're saying this, I thought, boy, so glad that we don't live in an age like that, huh? We're talking with Dr. Jim Papandrea about his book, How Christianity Saved Civilization. More to come on the other side of the break, folks. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, folks. We are talking with Dr. Jim Papandrea about his book, How Christianity Saved Civilization and Must Do So Again. And boy, you know, Jim, the parallels are scary because, you know, just like women really had no legal standing to stop the husband from killing his recently born baby, today men don't have any legal standing. And also the line between infanticide and abortion is getting blurred all the more. It's scary, the parallels.
That's right. And, you know, it's actually worse than that because, you know, we talk about sort of the idea of exploiting people's bodies as entertainment and the commodification of women. And I feel like, you know, today it's, not only are we back to that, but it's become voluntary. It's like the very victims of these things are you know, willingly involved in it. As you know, we have the whole pornography industry. We have a whole industry surrounding reality television, where humility, people are humiliated as entertainment on television, and they're willingly doing it because they're getting paid for it, but they're selling their souls.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's what I mean. This is a very timely book. I wish that this was required reading, like all Catholic schools. You know, let's talk about work. That's an interesting area. How did Christianity revolutionize the idea of work?
Well, you know, the Roman Empire was it was interesting in the sense that rich people, and this is not too much different from now, but, you know, rich people sort of had this idea that the way to really be successful is not to work for a living. You could own things for a living and collect rents, taxes, and things. And even owning a farm was considered respectable, but you didn't do the work yourself. And so the idea that there is dignity in labor is something that the church encouraged. The Roman world was a world where, you know, you only did work because you had to. And I know that there's a lot of us who may feel that way about our day jobs now, but, you know, it would be healthy if we could bring back this idea that there is dignity in labor and that there is a way in which you're serving God when you do your job. And in addition to that, just ideas like, you know, how to use money. You know, we in the church, we have understanding of concepts like charity and almsgiving. In the Roman world, you know, you didn't give charity. You didn't give alms. Romans gave they had philanthropy, but what that meant was, you know, you donated money to build a building that would have your name on it so that you would get more votes in the next election, or that, you know, it would, you know, bring honor. But you would never give money to someone who couldn't do you a favor in return, because everything in the Roman Empire was built on this idea of trading favors. And you know, the idea of almsgiving would be seen as ridiculous. And so, you know, the idea of how to use money, the idea that work can be a service of God, and that there should be a sort of a rhythm of work and rest and prayer. You know, all of these things come from the church. And then, of course, the church eventually got rid of slavery for a while, I mean, until it came back. But mm-hmm. but eventually, even the idea that people should be free to choose their work and not be owned by other people. I mean, these are all ideas that the church gave us. And so even when people who hate the church talk about these ideas, they need to give credit where credit is due, because it was the church that converted the empire to these ways of thinking.
Yeah, and that seems ultimately rooted in, again, that dignity of the person, that
absolutely.
Are you dignified in who you, what you are, but what you do as well.
That's right.
Yeah, very good. Boy, there's so much to cover. This is such a great book. How about how the Christianity had revolutionized death? That's an intriguing chapter.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of different aspects to that. I mean, in one case, in one sense, death was sort of the ultimate fear for the pagan. And of course, I mean, it makes sense if you believe that there's little or nothing to look forward to after death, then death is the ultimate end. So in one sense, Romans feared death. In another sort of paradoxical sense, they had this idea that suicide was an honorable way of solving certain problems, and they turned death into a form of entertainment in the blood sports, in the arena, in the gladiators. So they have this paradox of, you know, in one sense, fearing death, and in another sense, kind of, you know, embracing it and turning it into entertainment. And what the church did is, it, like the church always does, it rejected those extremes and saw death as, you know, for what it is, a transition and not the end. And the fact that Christians believed that there was something bigger than life and death in their faith is what ultimately converted a lot of Romans to Christianity, this idea that there's something bigger than life and death, and therefore I would rather, as a martyr, die than give up my faith. Well, that kind of blew the minds of the Romans, but once they got their heads around that, then they embraced it because they thought, yeah, I want to believe in something bigger than life and death that goes beyond death. And then, you know, once a person dies, the Christians believed in caring for the body because of the belief in resurrection. And so the Christians buried their dead like the Jews did, not cremating, but burying and caring for the body because, you know, they believed in the resurrection of the body. And so all of that kind of comes together for this sort of reverence for the body that is very different from the disdain for the body that you see in Roman culture and in Roman religion.
Yeah. So practices, Christian practices were odd because wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, but in Roman society, weren't the graveyards, they were pushed to like the outside the town. Like people didn't even want to see graveyards. They didn't want to have any contact with dead bodies. But Christianity brought them in the center of where the churches are with relics and all sorts of stuff like that.
Well, that's true. That's true. But it took a while. I mean, Christianity, the church really, like in Rome, for example, started bringing the relics to the churches inside the city walls, primarily to protect them from pirates and other raiders who were looting the tombs outside the city walls. So there was a practical aspect to that as well. But the real issue there for the church was wherever the relics of the martyrs were, you know, other Christians wanted their own bodies to be buried as close to them as possible because they felt like that would bring them closer to God by being closer to the martyrs in that sense. So from the very beginning of the church, there was always this veneration of the relics of the martyrs and this real sense that, again, because of the belief in the resurrection of the body, that where the martyrs' remains were, they were spiritually still connected to that place. And so Christians wanted to go there and be there and worship there.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, I suppose we should also talk about ultimately changing the state. How did Christianity change the state?
Right. Well, you know, one of the myths about Christianity is that the Emperor Constantine came along and created this marriage of church and state that was ultimately bad for both. But the truth is actually the opposite. Government and religion had always been linked in every human culture up until this time, and it was the Emperor Constantine in the year 313 who issued something called the Edict of Milan, which actually granted religious freedom to everyone. By ending the persecution of Christianity, he granted freedom to worship according to your conscience to everyone in the empire, and he invented the idea of religious freedom. Now, unfortunately, when he died and his sons took over, it kind of degenerated from there, and then eventually with a later emperor, Christianity became the only official religion of the empire. So it was an experiment that didn't last long, but, you know, when we think about religious freedom in our country, you know, we think the founding fathers of the United States invented that idea, but in fact, Constantine did, and now we live in a world, in a country where people would like to believe that freedom of religion is freedom from religion. Like they think they have the right not to be confronted by our religion, which is of course not correct. And so we find ourselves again in a countercultural situation where we have to fight for religious freedom, even in our own country. And it's just so interesting how people have this misconception about how things played out in the early church. And yet here we are facing different kinds of persecution again.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So this book's kind of like gives us our marching orders as Catholics and Christians, you know, that we need to reform the world. Very good. Well, how can people get a hold of your books and other things that you're doing?
Well, this book is from Sophia Institute Press, and so the easiest way to get this one is from their website, sophiainstitute.com. But if people want to find out more about me or my other books, my Amazon author page can be accessed pretty easily at drjimsbooks.com. So if people just go to drjimsbooks.com, you can spell out doctor or just DR, just no periods or apostrophes. drjimsbooks.com will take you to my Amazon author page, and people can find more about me from there.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. That's Dr. Jim Papandrea. And yeah, check out his stuff on Amazon, folks, especially this book. This is a great book, How Christianity Saved Civilization and Must Do So Again. Well, coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Matt Swaim about obstacles to becoming Catholic. Also Wednesday, Paul Thomas, the Eastern Rite apologist, returns. We're going to talk about Mary. And also Thursday, Ken Hensley will join us. And we're going to continue the discussion about where can non-believers or whether non-believers can really anchor their belief in a moral system when they don't accept God. So it's going to be lots of fascinating stuff this week. Coming up next, we have the dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio, the Terry and Jesse Show, coming up. And, man, the hour flew, but thank you so much for joining us. It's always a fun time to be here discussing apologetics. Time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center, turn off the dojo lights. Again, coming up next, Terry and Jesse, thank you so much for listening. And God willing, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.